All right, good day, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Blood Club, where you're supposed to talk about Blood Club, not keep it a secret. Today on this episode of Blood Club, I'm joined by Dr. Cami Maddox from The Ohio State University. I was watching a documentary on where The Ohio State came from, Cami, and it goes all the way to the Vikings wide receiver, Chris Carter. Yes, he did it in an interview once, and then it kind of became a thing of its own. So Dr. Maddox is a lymphoma expert at The Ohio State, and I want to welcome her today to talk to us about upfront management of mantle cell lymphoma. Cami, would you mind introducing yourself?
Thanks for having me, Dr. Lunning. I was excited to get an invite to Blood Club. I'm Cami Maddox. I'm at The Ohio State University James Comprehensive Cancer Center, where I treat lymphoma. I'm our lymphoma program director, and my focus really is in B-cell lymphoma, so non-Hodgkin's and Hodgkin's, with a particular interest in mantle cell.
Awesome. Thank you. So we know that mantle cell lymphoma kind of represents only about 5% of our non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. And I think it's one of those that when it's diagnosed, even out in the community, there's a sense of confusion about the diagnosis, how to manage it. And I think actually there's even more confusion now in 2023. You know, I was very excited to see that abstract number one last year at ASH, you know, was the triangle trial that really tried to kind of bring to question, you know, BTK in the front line, you know, do we need to do an auto transplant? But then a whole bunch of chaos kind of happened, I think, after the presentation, trying to figure out the data, but then again, kind of where ibrutinib kind of could fit in. And then with this most recent kind of withdrawal of ibrutinib, how is the triangle trial, the SHINE trial, if you want to dip your toe there, and kind of this, what's going on with ibrutinib kind of changed your practice in mantle cell lymphoma in the frontline setting?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. A lot's happened in the last year, some, you know, potentially expected and some I would say probably very unexpected, right? You know, mantle cell is challenging, but part of the reason I enjoy it, like many lymphomas, it's very heterogeneous. So you can have a newly diagnosed patient who presents and doesn't require treatment and, you know, you're going to observe them. And then you have patients with very aggressive disease who are like admitted from your clinic to start treatment immediately. Looking at the data that's come over the past year, so I think it was very exciting to see the triangle data. So let's step back and actually talk about SHINE, because that was presented first, right? That was presented last summer. Positive frontline trial adding ibrutinib to bendamustine rituximab done in older patient population, not candidates for transplant. Most people are giving BR in this situation. The trial was positive for its primary endpoint, progression-free survival advantage to adding ibrutinib, no overall survival, which, you know, if you look at mantle cell trials in general, that's what we see with them, right? We see PFS benefits, but not OS benefits. But there was toxicity concerns with that, and I'm not sure that we fully anticipated what was going to happen, but you know, question of does ibrutinib really add anything to the BR, or are you better off, or can you get just as much out of giving it sequentially, save the toxicity? And then we saw, you know, application for approval of the concept, and then suddenly questions about the toxicity, and then a withdrawal from the FDA indication. So in that whole time frame, we saw the triangle data readout at ASH. And I think that that was exciting data because to me, that did kind of solidify BTK's place in the frontline treatment. So their, you know, benefit to the BTK inhibitor. I think there was, you know, still a question with the current follow-up. Do patients benefit more from transplant and BTK or just BTK? But definitely, you know, transplant without the BTK, they benefited from having the BTK there. So to me, when you look at all this data together, I think that it tells us, hey, it seems like patients really do benefit from BTK inhibitors in the frontline setting.
Is it BTK is the class? Because, you know, there's other trials like EA4181, you know, it's using a really a bendamustine-based approach. Or is it a matter that you are using an R-CHOP where you're, you know, having the BTK and then you have the alternating, you know, platinum and cytarabine containing, you know, high-dose therapy?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question. One, I think if you look at the triangle data, it seems that probably the BTK maintenance portion, you know, is where patients are likely benefiting from that. So whether Shine would have been better, you know, getting through the Benda and then adding the BTK. But on that trial, they got BTK for about, you know, 2 years' time. So I think the question with Shine is the patient population, is it because they're older patients? Is it the chemo backbone with bendamustine rituximab, or is it the BTK inhibitor with ibrutinib? Or is it a combination of all of those things? I mean, we've seen other frontline data. So these are smaller studies, but if you look at the MD Anderson data with ibrutinib in an older population for frontline treatment, right, like a 50-patient study, but 40% of patients went off due to toxicity, most of which was cardiac events. So they presented at Lugano the Aura-Cala frontline in the same number of patients, much better tolerated combination. You know, a small number of patients went off due to toxicity. So I think that it's potential that the BTK matters, but we've also seen a lot of combinations of therapies in combination with bendamustine that haven't gone well. When you take together the older patient population, the bendamustine combo, and the BTK use, I think probably all of them have some contribution.
Got you. And so I know that we're kind of dipping now the toe into our second generation. I alluded to, you know, the utilization of acalabrutinib in our kind of a cooperative group studies. There was very small amount of zanubrutinib data, you know, kind of substituting out cisplatinum for oxaliplatinum in the bridge trial. So you, and then there's, you know, kind of chemotherapy, you know, essentially free that you alluded to regimens, which are really bringing, you know, BTK to the front line, you know, with antibodies and kind of a less maybe transplant. Not that they're transplant ineligible, but I think the other part of confusion in mantle cell lymphoma right now, based upon some of the Flatiron data, is kind of, is there that benefit of transplant if you're going to kind of continue to do it? Do you do it in those individuals over 65? So in your mind now, kind of as you think about, you know, when or if you're going to do transplant, is age more mattering or what BTK you're using?
So when I'm thinking about transplant now, I discussed the triangle data, and I think in young patients, it's still worth a conversation. First of all, let's step back. It's kind of amazing that we actually don't have an FDA approval for a BTK inhibitor for frontline mantle cell lymphoma in any setting, like any setting, right? Lots of data, including randomized data. It's made it into the guidelines, right? So I think probably triangle's not gone for an approval. It was withdrawn because of bendamustine rituximab. There are other studies planned or ongoing, so hopefully we see that. But it's just kind of amazing when you think about the progress in other areas that you can prescribe it for a patient and hope that it gets covered, but technically there is not an approval. But so stepping back to the transplant question, I still talk to younger patients about, you know, the data that we have. I don't know that we've ever actually proven in the current era of therapy that transplant's necessarily the right thing to do in patients, or that's a whole other discussion. But I do think it provides the longest PFS benefit from what we know. I think it's still worth a discussion in younger patients. That data's out there, and I talk to them about it and, you know, recommend that they have a rituximab and BTK maintenance. But, you know, kind of the discussion, I think, as you mentioned, there's a second ECOG trial, right? And that's meant to answer the question about transplant and MRD. So really, should patients who are MRD negative, should that be the deciding factor to go to transplant? And so I think that data could be helpful in this discussion. And it's still worth, if you have that trial open, discussing patients enrolling on that.
Yeah, that's the EA 4151 study. And it was kind of nice, you know, at least at our institution, we had 4181 open, and those patients could roll into 4151. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, what to do in those very difficult 10% patients that are kind of your TP53 mutated mantle cell lymphoma. There was some data from Shine about what did the BTK add to it. You know, now if you're talking about a younger patient in this setting that has a TP53 mutation, you know, what are you doing kind of, and what's the discussion about your upfront strategy in that small but yet meaningful population?
So I think in that population of patients that we know that they don't do well in general with chemoimmunotherapy, right, regardless if it's aggressive or less intensive therapy, it's nice in that population of patients. Ideally, you get them on a clinical trial. I think one option in those patients is kind of an antibody BTK approach. If you can get it approved, thinking that you're trying to get a response, give them the least amount of toxicity, but they're probably headed for a therapy like CAR T cells.
Are you thinking about BTK BCL2 in that situation? I know there was early data with IV or ibrutinib venetoclax. Are you thinking about an AV type of approach then if you can get it? Or is this a special population where you're kind of trying to, be current with the data?
So I would say that that's probably the ideal approach. I've never done that in a frontline patient. And I'm not, I'm not sure if you can get that approved. In the relapse setting for a patient that had that, I have done that combination in the higher risk population in frontline. So I think at ASH, we'll see updated data on Bovin. We've got a little preview of that, which looks very promising, right? I think small numbers, but we saw the same thing with the OASIS data in a few patients with TP53, whereas the Bovin was, more dedicated towards that population.
In my recollection, Bovin is it's just for TP53 mutated or deletion.
Yeah, like that is just high risk.
Bendamustine, zanubrutinib, and venetoclax.
Yeah.
Correct? Okay. Yeah. That's an exciting trial. And, I think it came out of Memorial Sloan Kettering, I believe, is the home of that trial. Yeah, there's lots of interesting combinations. Where do you see lenalidomide kind of in this space? Because I know that there was some early, single center, R-square data in mantle cell lymphoma. And now it's being included in some of these trials of untreated mantle cell lymphoma. Is that going to be kind of another partner as we look away, trying to whittle away at this chemotherapy backbone?
I think that's a great question. Small data with R squared, small numbers, but in the patient population in that study, they had really good long-term follow-up as far as progression-free survival. If you look, there's a small number, but there's Calo-Len, Obinacalulan, and then R-Ven-Len, all of which have shown high overall response rates, complete response, and then some early MRD data looking pretty positive. So I think in the kind of the non-chemo combination frontline, that is still kind of potentially in there with those triplet combinations.
As we wrap up here, a lot of randomized trials with a lot of results recently, but I still think like a lot of chaos in the space, whether or not, you're willing to kind of go to the second generation therapies, if you're willing to kind of give up transplant based upon the triangle data. And really the guidelines kind of saying, can we kind of substitute out carbo or oxaliplatinum for cisplatinum? And can we substitute the second generation of BTK inhibitors like acalabrutinib or zanubrutinib for ibrutinib, in this space? And so, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. Is a lot of great clinical trials still available for mantle cell lymphoma. They've grown up in the relapse refractory setting and now are moving into the frontline setting. And we'd like to be beyond clinical trials with the standard of care. A lot of stuff still living in that clinical trial realm with very good trials, both national and industry-sponsored trials in mantle cell lymphoma in the untreated setting. Dr. Maddox, any other final parting words before we close shop today and everybody drives into the parking garage or their parking space here on the Blood Club?
I mean, I think hopefully over the next, short amount of time, we see some of these other randomized trials read out and have some data. I think there is some excitement looking at the bispecific antibodies. We're making it in the relapse setting, but hopefully the future also includes moving them into the front line. So lots of good stuff out there.
There you have it, folks. And we appreciate your time and have a great rest of your day.